Accession number 27243, Mr. Don Reynolds, Reel 7. Now, we were talking about, you know, about the situation just after the sinking of HMS Hardy, you know, and so what happened next?
We got up to Kola, and after about 24 hours, we went alongside the jetty at Poliano, which is one of the Russian naval bases. And from the workshop there, we had a couple of fellas came down and did a survey, I think. And within a very short period, we had a load of Russian women came down and built a platform around the bow. And from that stage on, they repaired it. It was virtually done, I think, and almost entirely by Russian dockyard ladies. We've heard a lot about the Russian ladies being all the, you know, hard, buxom types, and indeed these were. And with the weather conditions, fairly deep snow on the ground and the rest of it, they were pretty tough. But they built a new bow on there and filled it with concrete and all sorts of stuff, you know, to make it absolutely okay for our return journey. And indeed, the bow remained on there until we had a full refit very much later on. So that whilst we were up there, we saw a little bit more of the Russian life. We went up to Murmansk. The weather conditions, as I've said, were snowy. The ground was absolutely frozen solid, and there was no likelihood, I think, of it thawing for a considerable time. And I think Poliano is the odd, it seemed to me, 2 or 3 miles from memory, away from Murmansk. But they took us up there on flat trucks. Ordinary flat trucks with a bit of a board round the edge, perhaps 18 inches, 12 or 18 inches high. And we sort of sat on there in the cold and the wind and everything else while they motored over these absolutely frozen, ice-packed roads at a fair old speed, to say that there were treadless tyres and the rest of it. And it did allow us to see the conditions that the Russians were actually living in. And this at a time when the Germans were bombing them fairly frequently. They came across, there were alerts for German planes, but although we never actually got bombed or anything, I can't recall being bombed. But they, the Russians were, I think, only about 40 or 50 miles away. And
the Germans,
yes, were just 50 miles away. And we were given a reasonable reception when we were dropped off in Murmansk. We went into the Inn Tourist Club, and we had whatever they offered us, which was very little really. Everybody wanted to taste the vodka, of course, and you were offered vodka with tea. Well, the tea, I think, was probably something like sparkling soda water or something of this sort. But that and the odd sandwich or something was about the size of it. But they did put on a show for us. Although I think this was the afternoon, there was a Russian, probably an Ensa type party. Several people performed on this stage, and they sang Russian songs, for us and did one or two little Russian dances and all the rest of it that you might have, you know, appreciated. And I thought it was very good. I rather think that we had a programme at the time, although I can't find evidence of having one now. And they were actually performing Finnish songs, although a few miles away they were actually fighting the Finns, or had been recently. And I thought that was quite a good sign. And there was also the big Russian club in the centre of Murmansk, and we went there, and that's where the Russians were eating as well. And the menu was very, very limited. And the main thing I remember about going across there, the streets were huge, wide boulevards, as you often see on the television. On every second tree was a loudspeaker that was playing typical Russian music and exhorting the inhabitants to do their utmost to perform necessary duties and so on. Everything very, very regimented. When we'd when we'd drunk our vodka and so on, and it was time to go back, you walk out of a fairly warm room or canteen area out into the freezing cold and onto the back of a flat truck, and the journey back wasn't too clever. One or two people were rather under the weather, and they were under the weather as well, because it was bitterly cold. And that was a very good experience. I'm pleased to have had it. Now, the other experience we had was that we walked up to the local town. I don't know if it was Poliano town or not. And there, they had the type of thing that we now have with our precincts. A fully covered precinct and the rest of it, with all the local shops, such as they were. I can't recall full details, but they put on a fairly good show. And the people, of course, who couldn't parade outside, promenaded along the covered ways of the shopping centres. And then we went into the Russian cinema. And the film there was the typical Russian film that you would expect to see, the very largely propaganda type item. And then there was a war item, a newsreel and so on, showing the brave people at the front and all the rest of it, and the brave people in the factories and on the farms. But it was the first time, I've said this several times to people, and I'm pretty sure it was true, it was the first time I had heard sort of wraparound sound. I thought it was rather perhaps almost a 3D type of thing, rather than just the flat screen type of sound that we were used to. In other words, I think they were, on some fronts, they were fairly well advanced. Whilst we were there, we visited or heard about people who were in the hospital, that had come in from the convoys. And of course the conditions there were really very primitive. And whilst we were alongside, there was a chap from one of our destroyers came along, and he was in what we used to call a Robinson stretcher. In other words, he was strapped in with the stretcher round him and bound, and there was a rope at either end for him to so that he could be manipulated. And he was actually on the top of one of the motorboats from the ship that he belonged to, and they had to get him onto the jetty. And the people that had got his head passed the line up and so on, and as they were pushing to get him onto the jetty, the boat began to move out. It hadn't been properly secured, and the boat began to run out. And this chap, although his arms were pinioned to his side by the stretcher, went under the water in the bitter cold, caused real panic stations, and several people jumped on and helped to haul him aboard. And there he was, wringing wet, and they hoiked him off to the hospital. But we understood later that he did actually survive it and his appendicitis. Yes, I didn't, but some of the people that were there a little longer were playing the Russians at football and this sort of thing to pass the time.
So, how long were you there for?
Well, I've a feeling that we were there for... We were about six weeks or something from leaving England, but I'm not too sure. I've no record of us leaving to go back to Scapa. But certainly the next convoy the next run that we had was actually one that was repatriating Americans and people who had been based in Russia. Now, the Americans had actually handed over various battleship and one or two cruisers or destroyers to the Russians. And before the Second Front, there was a big manoeuvre to get as many people out of Russia as possible, because we needed them, I suppose, in our own armed forces. But a tremendous number of Americans were repatriated, and that was the thing that really caused quite a stir. There are lists of how many people were carried on the different boats back to Britain. And whilst I haven't got the figure, I think it was something like 17 that we had on board. And the thing about it is that due to the tremendous differences between the British and the Americans, the American petty officers were virtually treated as officers and therefore were in the wardroom, and the ordinary matlows were in the mess decks, and even there they were in the petty officers' mess decks rather than we poor seamen. And once they were on board, they volunteered to take a watch to relieve us. And obviously you couldn't turn them down, they wanted to go. And it came to light that on the American boats, if you were a lookout, you were a lookout and you did virtually nothing else. Well, now these chaps, when they were volunteering to do lookouts, well, they weren't used to the procedures and the rest of it, and they were almost going to sleep on the job. They thought that if they sat in that chair and occasionally looked through their binoculars, they were doing a good job. But it wasn't more than one watch before they were turfed off, and we took over because of our own safety. They just hadn't got a grip on it at all. So we weren't sorry when we did a fast trip to get them back to Scapa Flow and let them carry on their own way. But we always, I think, had a strange regard for the standard of things in the American forces. We were told that in some places when they were landing on invasions, the second boat ashore was the Naffy one, and the third one had even got the billiard table or the pool table. And that's rather the impression we had from our having them on board. They had to be catered for specially.
Now what happened next then? Moving it through January into February?
When we get to that, we then, I think, came on to preparations probably for the second front.
Now what kind of preparations were you involved in?
Well, I think it's difficult to see how it did fit in with a big gap between February and June, but they were taken with ordinary, not Russian convoys, but getting rid of the Tirpitz and so on. We did one or two sweeps up the Norwegian coast.
Now tell me about them.
Well, there's one of those in May that I remember particularly. It's quite possible that we had a bit of a refit in the meantime, but certainly in April and certainly in May we did an operation against the Tirpitz, and that's when we escorted carriers, one or two carriers, up the coast and steamed among the Lofoten Islands and this type of thing. The Tirpitz was in one of the fjords, and I think the RAF had an odd do at it, and they decided that our people should have a do as well. And I think we did that two or three times, probably.
Do you remember anything in particular about these sweeps?
Not really, except that on the odd one we would see the Norwegian fishermen, and you sort of thought, well, it looked as though they might be waving to you and wanted a lift back to Britain. But of course we didn't get involved in that sort of thing, officially anyway. I never had any knowledge of it. But it was quite a nice experience. And of course, whereas I think I mentioned the Northern Lights during the winter period, in April, May, you've got beautiful 24-hour sunlight. And at any time of day, you could have read the newspaper on the deck and this sort of thing. And whilst it was perhaps a little bit cold for sunbathing, it was very pleasant.
Can I ask about the food you had on ship and the messing system? Messing system first, really, and then food.
The messing system. Well, on the destroyers, or the bulk of the destroyers, each mess was responsible for its own grub. And you were lucky if you got somebody who had got a little bit of a knack with preparation of food. And we were fortunate with a couple of fellas who were fairly adept at cooking, or not at cooking, but preparing. Because on our type of destroyer anyway, there was a big kitchen forward and a small kitchen aft. The small kitchen looking after the four messes on our mess deck, the petty officers and the three seamen messes, and the two petty officer mess. No, one petty officer mess. The other cabin was for a midshipman that was aft. And you got a very close connection with, in our case, Charlie, our chef, who lived down our mess with us. and he looked after all the food that we prepared. And you used to go to the naffy to get the wherewithal for the meals. They were issued to you, and then you prepared them. We hadn't any room for keeping things ourselves. We hadn't any lockers that could hold on to stuff. So you drew it from the naffy, and you were allowed so much per day per person, obviously. And the chef was a wonder. He got used to preparing things or salving things that people had prepared that perhaps weren't 100% to start off. And particularly one time that I remember, we were to have some meal with a stew pudding or something. And one of our chaps, instead of using custard powder, used baking powder. And there was quite a carry on trying to keep the preparation stirred down so that when it arrived up at the kitchen, it was still low enough to be accepted as a custard rather than anything else, because it was virtually boiling out over the top. And that's the sort of thing that the chef had to try and cope with. But
food like?
Basically, we did pretty well. I can't remember us really complaining.
What sort of food would you get? Can you? Or
it's difficult to remember. Difficult to remember.
Okay. But you no complaints?
No complaints.
How did you get on with the other lads in your mess deck? You know, the other ordinary seamen or able seamen?
Yes, we were all, so many of us were ordinary seamen until we passed tests later on. And no, we got on extremely well. There were the odd arguments, obviously.
What would they be about?
Well, whether the Scots were better footballers than the English, this sort of thing. When you were ashore, the Scots were always out. Got a ball from somewhere and kicking it around. And of course, one or two of them tended to be a little bit fractious, should we say. That if you put a wrong word about Glasgow or a Scottish team or anything else, then you'd be in for a bit of a fight. But no, basically we had a very good crowd.
No bullying then?
No, I don't think so.
How about the leading team and the petty officers? How did you get on with them?
Basically extremely well. They treated us well, and they knew, I think, that they only got the best out of us if they treated us reasonably. And there were no problems. Just thinking back to the messing, I had one of my worst problems was when, at the time, at Christmas time, when I was the detailed as the cook, or at least the assistant cook, I was sent along to the naffy to get the rations, and particularly the ration that we were looking forward to was a hock of ham. And I went along there and got it, and I got the nutty ration. Everybody had a nutty ration, and it was Mars bars. And I put them into the bag with the hock of ham and started off along the upper deck. I came out of the forward hatch onto the deck by the whaler. There was a whaler outboard there. and then along the deck to our place aft were these safety ropes, and I got the safety rope and walked along, and I'd no sooner set onto the main deck when the boat decided to zig. And the first thing that happened, a huge wave came in, and it, although I'd got hold, it lifted me off my feet, drew me off the rope that I was holding, and I was going along the deck on my back for about probably 20, 30 feet until I landed up against the stanchion. And it was the stanchion that stopped me. I won't say from going overboard, although that was always a possibility. But it, I did lodge up against a depth charge thrower. And I'd been spotted by one of my messmates, who immediately gave a shout and got people down below to see that I was all right, and that I was still on board, which was the big thing. And when they got me collected together, I'd lost my bag, which had got the hock of ham for the mess, and the Mars bars, and the other odd things that I'd got. That caused a little bit of a problem at the start, but I went back to the NAFI and had a word with the NAFI man, and he replaced them without too much bother. But that, I think, was one of my worst experiences. Another time, and I'm not sure which convoy it was on, I did spend a time, I was going on watch, and as I was going onto the upper deck, the boat again zagged instead of zigged. And I had to take, because of the water coming in, I had to take safety precautions, and I jumped on top of the torpedo tubes. We'd got two pairs of fours torpedo tubes, and I jumped on these torpedo tubes and hid as best I could behind the small turret that was there until things settled down, and then carried on forward. But in the meantime, it had been reported that I hadn't arrived at the gun. And they telephoned down aft and asked that they search for me, and they had had a search round. And they were quite relieved when I appeared. And there again, it's the sort of thing that one had to do in those conditions. It's perhaps a time to say that